Welcome back. I'm Rose Aguilar, and this is Your Call. With the 2012 presidential election cycle well underway, President Obama is starting to defend his record. This week, his reelection team sent out a photo of the Obama family, along with a foldable card that says, quote, "Sometimes people ask, what has President Obama accomplished in the last 3 years? These cards contain the answer. The question is simple. Will we go forward and build on these accomplishments, or will we go back? The answer is now in your hands." The card contains issues including women and their families, healthcare, the economy, and ending the war in Iraq. So on today's Your Call, we are having a debate about President Obama's record on healthcare, the environment, and U.S. foreign policy. In the new book, Hopeless, Barack Obama and the Politics of Illusion, Jeffrey St. Clair and Joshua Frank have compiled a number of essays critiquing the president's performance. They write, quote, "The Obama revolution was over before it started, guttered by the politician's overweening desire to prove himself to the establishment. From there on, other promises, from confronting climate change to closing Gitmo, from ending torture to initiating a nationalized healthcare system, proved even easier to break." Joshua Frank is an environmental journalist and author of Left Out, How Liberals Helped Reelect George W. Bush. He's co-editor of Red State Rebels, and Joshua Frank and Jeffrey St. Clair are also authors of the book Green Scare, The New War on Environmentalism. Hi, Joshua. Welcome to the show.
Thanks so much for having me.
It's great to have you. And many argue that President Obama has done the best he could with the cards he was dealt. Faz Shakir is generally supportive of the president's performance so far. Faz is vice president at the Center for American Progress and editor-in-chief of thinkprogress.org. He's former research associate for the Democratic National Committee, co-author of Howard Dean's Prescription for Real Healthcare Reform, and Faz also authored a chapter called Blogging the Election in The Change We Need, What Britain Can Learn from Obama's Victory. Hi, Faz. Welcome back to the show.
Hi. Thanks for having me.
It's great to have you. So, Joshua, let's start off with you. Your book is filled with essays critiquing President Obama, and I just want to read from this card that a lot of people got this week. It says, "From day one, the president has worked tirelessly to end the war in Iraq, expand access to health care for all Americans, and implement an economic recovery program that's created nearly 3 million jobs. It says we've accomplished so much and we still have a great deal left to do." So overall, what is your assessment of President Obama's performance?
I would say, given the fact that he came into office with an overwhelming support from Americans, primarily, you know, from people that were disillusioned with the Bush administration, he had the backing of the liberal establishment, from a majority of progressives. To say that he rode this wave into the White House is, I think, a fair assessment. However, the first thing that he did when he got into office was chum up to Wall Street, bail out the banks, expand the war in Afghanistan. He, for those that were pushing for single-payer health care, he didn't even push for the public option. And he caved to the Tea Party as well, even though that he had the majority of support and the majority of Americans weren't in line with the Tea Party. Of course, the Democrats ended up losing the House and the Senate, and things have really unfolded since then. But overall, I would give this president a C-minus or a D-plus, which is not a grade that much better than his predecessor, unfortunately.
Ouch. Well, you know, Josh, we've got a pretty bad line. We're going to try to call you back. Maybe you can go to another area of your house. Unfortunately, in this age of no landlines, some people only have cell phones, so we'll try to get a better connection with Joshua. Faz, what are your thoughts? How do you assess President Obama's record thus far?
Well, I don't have a grade for President Obama. However, I think he's done a fair job of moving a progressive agenda over his years in office. I think one of the things that I often hear from my progressive friends is that he didn't accomplish absolutely everything that he campaigned on. And while that's true, I think it fails to note a couple of the obstacles that he has had to face, namely, and most importantly, Congress. which you almost never hear in these conversations. There is never a consideration of the fact that the president has not been able to get many of his allies and Democrats in Congress to work on his agenda, particularly when the issue of Guantanamo Bay, for instance, came up. This was an issue that John McCain himself campaigned on with President Obama. And if it was an issue that could have been resolved simply by presidential action, I guarantee you it would have been done. However, Republicans and Democrats in Congress stood in his way. And so I think there's a lot of blame to go around for things that haven't been done. And it obscures, unfortunately, the fact that a lot of progress has been made on things that we care about. And if you don't get to 100% but get to 75%, I think it's still a victory at the end of the day. And it's one of the reasons why I think you would want another 4 years of this president so that you can get further along and closer to the 100% mark.
And so you're talking about obstacles not only from Republicans, but also from Democrats, specifically the Blue Dog Democrats.
Well, it's not only the Blue Dogs. I mean, on various issues, Blue Dogs have certainly stood in the way of a bank tax, a financial transactions tax, a cram down on housing legislation. These are things that they've fought against, and largely because they have allies and big banks and big mortgage industries who support them. But I think on a variety of issues, whether it was the public option, it was. Various Democrats, Joe Lieberman in that case, who stood in the way, I think, of an expansion and some others. And then on Guantanamo Bay, it was a coalition of all kinds of Democrats who were standing in the way of trying to get the president's mission accomplished there.
Well, this brings up big issues also about the candidates that the Democrats choose to support. When you're looking at like a Joe Lieberman versus a Ned Lamont, the establishment really got behind Joe Lieberman. What are your thoughts on that, Joshua? So Faz just said that one of the major problems is that the president is facing many, many obstacles, a hostile Congress, not only from the Republican side, but also from the Democratic side.
Well, that's because the Democrats are bought and sold by the same corporations that the Republicans are. It's not that Obama is up against his own party. He is part of that party. He is part of the establishment. So to say that these are the barriers, that's true in one sense, but Obama is also part of that problem, part of the barriers for those of us that want progressive change. Barack Obama is one of those hurdles. Now, I'm not advocating for people to go out and vote for Mitt Romney. I'm not saying this is who you need to vote for, who you need to support, or why not to support Barack Obama. What my position is, and will be throughout the election, is from a progressive standpoint, Barack Obama may listen to our concerns. He may heed our concerns. He may have an open ear. However, if we're not yelling at him, if we're not on the White House steps opposing the Keystone Pipeline, for example, or what have you, he is not going to listen to our concerns. So the progressive establishment, if they are to get behind Barack Obama's candidacy coming up, I think that will distort and also hinder any chance for holding him accountable once he's elected.
Can I just add
sure.
that I am supportive of what Josh has just said there, that and it's one of the reasons I support the president, that he has shown that in those instances where the progressive movement builds support for an idea, whether it's Keystone Pipeline, whether it's trying to speak out on Trayvon Martin, whether it is calling for the end of Don't Ask, Don't Tell, that even if it wasn't a top-level priority for President Obama, he saw that this was an issue that the progressive movement and the country cared deeply about and reacted to that by asserting some leadership. And I think it's absolutely right. The politicians ultimately, they are they're politicians. They're trying to follow the way that the winds blow. And I think Obama is amongst the best politicians that we have, but he's yet still a politician. And so he's trying to get a sense of where he could position himself, generally sometimes following in these instances. And if the progressive movement is leading and pushing and advocating, and I think it starts with pushing, advocating Congress to try to be a better ally for Obama, I think you're going to get at the end of the day, a better Obama.
Well, I'd love to get listeners in on this. What do you think of President Obama's record thus far? We're going to specifically talk today about health care, the environment, and U.S. foreign policy. But if there's anything else you'd like to add to that, that's fine. I mean, there's so much here to talk about. How do you rate his actions? If you supported the president, how do you view him now? If you've seen some progress, what stands out for you? If there are some disappointments, what stands out for you? The toll-free number is 866-798-8255, 866-798-8255. What do you think about the argument that there are just too many obstacles? We've got a hostile Congress, not only on the Republican side, but also on the Democratic side. You can also leave a comment at yourcallradio.org. You can also email feedback at yourcallradio.org. So before we talk about some of the disappointments, Faz, you mentioned that there's been a lot of progress. What can you really point to when we're looking at healthcare, the environment, and U.S. foreign policy?
Well, all those things, actually. So healthcare, I know that it's not everything that we wanted. It's an absolutely wonderful step in the right direction. You get 30 plus million people covered. You start to build state level exchanges that will only improve healthcare over time. I think the actual benefits are in the details, and where you have yet to see a lot of the details come through once the exchanges are enacted in 2014.
Let's stick on this though, healthcare,
sure.
Just on this one. So Joshua, a lot of people say, hey, we didn't get single payer, we didn't get a public option, but this is a step in the right direction.
It's a step in the right direction if you're part of the insurance cartel, that's for sure. But I was actually having a conversation with a health advocate here in Long Beach this morning about the Supreme Court battle going on with the health care. And he was an advocate for the public option. He's an advocate for single payer. And he actually believes that this is a step in the wrong direction. Mm-hmm. I think a lot of grassroots people that have been involved in the health care struggle were very, very disillusioned by the Obama administration and, in fact, felt backstabbed by their reluctance to support even a meager public option in what he deemed, you know, a radical transformation of our healthcare industry. The health insurance companies are also not that afraid of the Obama administration's healthcare plan. So I would tend to disagree that this is a step in the right direction.
Listen, I wrote a book advocating for the public option. I am also disappointed about the fact that a public option didn't get done. I think where I probably disagree with Josh is I just don't see Obama as king who could have accomplished this without getting Joe Lieberman, Mark Pryor, Blanche Lincoln, and a variety of other Democrats to actually vote in the right direction. And whether he got up on a stump and started yelling at them and going to their home districts and screaming at them, I just don't think that was going to be enough to change their views, and you needed a progressive movement in those states to hold those people accountable, and we didn't have it.
Well, and I would counter that Barack Obama didn't have the political will to step up to Max Baucus and other prominent Democrats, even though he is the commander-in-chief. And in order to make and change radical health care transformation in this country, it was going to probably take at least two terms to even accomplish that. So out of the gate, I think that he went about it in the wrong approach and, in fact, failed most of Americans when it comes to changing the way that they access health care in this country.
But yet we got health care reform done, and I think that for many people it was the holy grail of something that Democrats always talked about but never acted on. And I think that to the extent even that Josh is disappointed with it, something got done, and he may think it moved in the wrong direction. I'm firmly of the opposite view, that it actually moves in the right direction. The expansion of Medicaid to cover people 133% above poverty is going to have an immediate and tangible impact on people who are low income, who can't afford health care and can immediately get it.
And Faz, the other point here that a lot of people criticized the president for is during the debate, the health insurance industry got a front row seat at the table. And we all remember seeing the single payer doctors get arrested and they didn't get a seat at the table. So that's the other, we hear this from listeners a lot. They feel like the people with the money obviously have the voice and the rest of us don't.
Oh, yeah, I agree with the fact that single payer was never on the table. It's a travesty, and it's a travesty of the process, but it shows also that there wasn't, in my view, a movement within Congress that had a lot of support for it. You just had a lot of naysayers, even amongst Democrats, who were like, oh, well, that would never pass. And it was Dennis Kucinich and a small number of people who in Congress who wanted to push this agenda, despite the fact that I believe that there are large numbers of actual people outside of Congress who support it. But it all this is going to show is the problem. And I think this is what we're having to debate right now, is who is the problem? And I think that the problem lies within Congress and changing some of the attitudes and holding some of those people accountable. I think that the president would have been extremely supportive of supporting a public option for health reform. I've talked to him about it. I know that it was deeply felt, and he just felt there wasn't the political will for it. And that's what we've got to change.
And Joshua?
Well, there's not a political will for it because his door hasn't been open to those folks that have been advocating for a public option or, in fact, single payer. And I think that while you might believe people might believe that this is a step in the right direction for health care reform, in fact, it sets back the movement for a single payer. It sets back the movement for a public option. We need to start over from scratch. We need to get private industry out of the insurance business, or in the health care business, rather. And Obama is not on our side. The door is not even open. And I think it's apparent in who is involved in the process to begin with. So those voices were not even included. And I think that is part of the problem that people that support Obama should have, is that he gets the progressive vote. He has progressive support, but progressives don't have a seat at the table. And that's a problem. And that's something that needs to change. And the only way to have that change to come about is to hold him accountable. And progressives aren't going to do that as long as they wholeheartedly support his candidacy.
In fact, as a result of the passage of Obamacare, Vermont moved in the direction of single payer. It actually opened the door for them to be able to do that. And so for Josh to suggest that single payer advocates have been shut down and simply have like died as a movement is absolutely wrong. In fact, as a result of the law and a waiver introduced by the Obama administration, Vermont was able to move in that direction and has given hope to many single payer advocates.
They were moving in that direction well before this administration. And most of the people in Vermont that are pushing for single payer want to repeal, from my understanding, the current health care bill, the Obamacare.
So I don't think that's true at all.
I think you're latching on to something good, but it's a spurious connection.
That is Joshua Frank. He is co-editor, along with Jeffrey St. Clair, of the new book, Hopeless, Barack Obama and the Politics of Illusion. And they'll be speaking at the Anarchist Book Fair this Saturday in San Francisco at 10:30 a.m., the San Francisco County Fair Building Hall of Flowers at Golden Gate Park. You can find a link at yourcallradio.org. We're also joined by Faz Shakir. He's vice president of the Center for American Progress and editor-in-chief of thinkprogress.org. And we've got full lines. We'll have a couple open in just a few minutes. 866-798-8255. We're debating President Obama's record specifically on health care, the environment, and U.S. foreign policy. You can also leave a comment at yourcallradio.org. And let's go through a few callers, and then we'll get responses. Let's hear from Jason in Salinas. Hi, Jason. Welcome to the show.
Hi, Rose. So the question that I have for both of the panelists is, if history had to judge Obama right now, today, do you believe that perhaps it would be his foreign policy that he would be judged most favorably on, particularly given that he put Hillary Clinton in charge? She's been very, very active globally. We're a little obsessed with domestic issues right now, but I'm very curious about your take on foreign policy.
All right, thank you. We'll get an answer in just a minute. Let's hear from Zia in San Rafael. Hi, Zia.
Good morning, Rose. Extremely timely discussion, this. I'm not a Democrat, I'm not a Republican, I'm an independent, probably a realist. Now, let's look at what we've got right now, and if we don't want to sort of get enthusiastic about re-electing Mr. Obama, what do we have? Who are the alternatives? And then on the other side, look at the Supreme Court. Now, if we have a Republican president for the next 4 years, the outcome will be devastating for this country. That is the question. I mean, you can go for the whole when you've got just a bit, and then by going for the whole, losing even that little bit that you've got in your hand. That is what's bothering me, and that's why it makes me to re-elect Mr. Obama. I don't agree with his foreign policy. I don't agree with his health care policy. But he's the best that we've got. And as Mr. Rumsfeld said, you go to the war with the army you've got, not with the army you wish to have. Thank you.
All right. Thank you, Zia. Let's hear next from John in Santa Cruz. Hi, John. Hi, John. Sorry, we lost John. Let's go to Ruby in Mill Valley. Hi, Ruby. Welcome to the show.
Hi, good morning. Thank you for this discussion. I've been making a list here of pro and con, and I love President Obama. I think he's done an outstanding job, given what he has to work within. He's not a monarch. As one of your guests has said, if the presidential order would work, he'd get a lot of things accomplished. But the con for me, where when he had the financial advisors appointed, like Lawrence Summers and Timothy Geithner, I mean, these are all the dudes from Wall Street, and were a bit reprehensible in my judgment. He got the Nobel Peace Prize. I didn't quite understand that. It was nice, but I didn't quite understand that. He now has the GE president, or former president, as an advisor. Yes, you know. So
he's actually the president, Jeffrey Immelt. He's his job czar.
Yes.
Right.
Whoopee. So pro is I'm on Medicare. I've been disabled. My donut hole is closing as we speak. Mm. I've saved so much money this year. Well, in the 2 years, for the last 2 years, because of the Health Care Act, I'm thrilled that we're going to start listing the calorie content by law, assuming that this will all be in place so that we know what we're eating when we're in a restaurant. I used those stimulus checks that I got. I stimulated the economy immediately. And if we don't have this healthcare thing now, it's not going to be, and nothing will change in my lifetime. It will not be revisited. It just won't be. So I think he's done a great job. So I support him. And, oh, my money is going to go not for him. The paltry little donations we're making are going to the Democratic Party because we do need a better Congress. We need a Congress that's not going to be stopping everything. We need a Congress that will compromise and get into it and have rational discussions and do something.
All right. Well,
as we had in our first 2 years, the most active Congress.
Thank you for calling in, Ruby. Along with this card that I mentioned that went out this week, there was a photo of the family and then an ask for money. And several people I've talked to this week say they're getting an ask for money almost every day from the reelect Obama campaign. So we have a number of comments here. If we don't go for Obama, we're going to get a Republican. If historians had to judge the president, would they look at foreign policy most favorable? Why don't we talk about that? Joshua, you've got a number of essays in your book, The U.S. as Israel's Enabler in the Middle East by Kathleen Christensen, War and Debt, Michael Hudson, Perpetual War by Tariq Ali. What are your thoughts on foreign policy?
Well, for those of us that during the Bush years opposed a neocon foreign policy agenda, if we were critical of the so-called war on terror, if we were concerned about civilian casualties, those concerns should absolutely be present today. We've seen an increase in our activity in Afghanistan. We've seen what some have called illegal drone strikes in Pakistan, areas that perhaps violate international law. We see renditions. We've seen torture continuing. We have seen a continuation of an agenda that was set forth by a neoconservative agenda and previous to that, obviously, with a neoliberal agenda with the Clinton administration. There has been no challenge to this inside the White House. Obama has continued to surround himself with the same hawks as Bush.
And hold that thought. We're going to take a quick break, and we're talking today about President Obama's record, talking right now about U.S. foreign policy. And we'll continue with Joshua Frank and Faz Shakir. You can join us, 866-798-8255. We'll be back after this.
You're listening to Your Call on KALW San Francisco. We have a free email newsletter. You can join more than 7,000 of your fellow listeners who get an email every week or two that will keep you up to date with the diverse programming on local public radio, as well as opportunities to participate in station events. Just click the email newsletter link on the front page of kalw.org.
This is Your Call. I'm Rose Aguilar. You can find more information about our show, yourcallradio.org. You can also listen to past shows there and sign up for our newsletter to find out what's coming up. Tomorrow, it's our Friday Media Roundtable, and we will have a conversation with ProPublica's Abram Lustgarten about his new book, Run to Failure, BP and the Making of the Deepwater Horizon Disaster. It's full of incredible details about what went on behind the scenes, who's running BP, and neglect. We'll also talk about the president's push to expedite the approval of the southern end of the Keystone XL oil pipeline. Next week, we'll have conversations about the California nuclear initiative that would shut down the state's last two nuclear plants. The deadline for getting signatures to put this on the November ballot is April 7th. We'll also have a conversation about what happens if these tax proposals are not passed. Higher education could take a very big hit due to cutbacks. California State University says it will not accept new admissions for the spring semester of 2013. So we'll be talking about what will happen if these tax proposals do not pass. Today, we are talking about President Obama's record so far on health care, the environment, and U.S. foreign policy. What are your thoughts on his record so far? Do you see some progress, some victories, some disappointments? We'd love to hear from you. 866-798-8255. 866-798-8255. If you supported the president, how do you feel now? You can leave a comment at yourcallradio.org or email feedback at yourcallradio.org. We're joined today by Joshua Frank, co-editor of the new book, Hopeless, Barack Obama and the Politics of Illusion. It includes a number of essays critiquing the president. Joshua Frank and Jeffrey St. Clair will be speaking at the Anarchist Book Fair on Saturday at 10:30 at the San Francisco County Fair Building, Hall of Flowers, Golden Gate Park. And we're also joined by Faz Shakir. He's generally supportive of the president's performance so far. He's VP at the Center for American Progress and editor-in-chief of thinkprogress.org. So, Joshua, before the break, you were talking about the president's record so far on foreign policy and criticizing him for really putting in the same hawks as President Clinton, some as President Bush, and really furthering the neoliberal agenda.
Right. And I think that with that said, I think the dangerous aspect of this, and I mean, I can continue to make the argument that he has pushed forward a very hawkish foreign policy agenda to the detriment, I think, of world peace. But what I think the problem is, and what I would argue is, look, if for instance, increasing troop levels in Afghanistan, if this were to take place under the Bush administration, the anti-war movement in this country would have been outraged, would have been on the streets. However, since it was a Democrat doing this, and since the progressive establishment was essentially silent, we were also complicit in allowing this administration to continue with an agenda that I believe is anti-progressive and, in fact, breeding more terrorism and hatred towards the United States globally, and particularly in the Middle East. So I think what needs to happen is the progressive community, the anti-war community, those that want peace need to wake up, and we need to, instead of supporting politicians that don't agree with us, we need to oppose policies that we don't agree with.
Faz, what's your response?
Well, first, before I get into foreign policy, I just want to defend Josh, even though I disagree with him on a lot of things regarding what a caller named Zia had said about Romney being a worse choice than Obama, which is ostensibly, obviously true, and I think Josh would even agree with. And what I hear Josh saying is he's not talking about the political contrast between Obama and Romney. He's talking about policies that he would like to see everybody, but particularly Obama, try to adopt. And so I think it's important to try to distinguish those two conversations. I think on foreign policy, it's certainly been a mixed bag. Afghanistan, to me, has been a great disappointment. I think President Obama handled or inherited a horrible situation from President Bush. And I think, in fact, Bush lost the war by squandering resources very early on when we had the support of many Afghans. And we could have done some kind of help on the ground and building institutions for them to support. But we lost that opportunity after, obviously, diversions into Iraq. And he inherited this and wanted to give it a last shot. I think it was the wrong call, but I think he did it with the right intentions. Hasn't gone well, and I hope that we're going to see a withdrawal and a push for a withdrawal soon. But I think that that conversation obscures all of the positives, which obviously everyone understands. We've got we've reduced our troop presence in Iraq. We've killed bin Laden. We've supported the Arab uprisings. We've passed a New START treaty to reduce nuclear weapon stockpiles around the world. I think that there's been a lot of efforts made, even on Middle East peace, where Obama didn't have, again, support in Congress to move in the direction that he wanted to move, whether it was holding Israel accountable for settlement activity or trying to get greater support for the Palestinian leadership. And so I think on a lot of these things, I think Obama has acted with pure intentions, and not all of them have turned out as well as we would have wanted. But I just don't see him as the crux of the problem here.
I guess I would counter only that it's easy to say he inherited this mess, but let's not forget that the Democrats controlled the House of Representatives when they initiated the war in Afghanistan. Overwhelming majority supported the war and invasion of Iraq to dismantle Saddam. So he inherited not just the Republican mess. He inherited a mess that was in large part created by his own party. So I don't think it's easy to distinguish the two, but he's actually was a part of that problem, even though he wasn't in the Senate at the time. He is still a part of that establishment.
I think in my view, it was in turn, particularly in managing Afghanistan, I think the blame lies with the administration who was managing Afghanistan. I think to the extent you want to be critical of Democrats is that they didn't try to implement funding restrictions on the president's effort to conduct foreign affairs. And I think that that's generally right. You want to support the administration's ability to conduct foreign affairs while disagreeing with the way in which they're doing it. And I think that that's in essence what the Democrats were saying. Also, of course, this was the period in which we were trying to withdraw from Iraq as our number one policy objective. A lot of people were arguing, including President Obama, that we should withdraw from Iraq to ramp up our troop presence in Afghanistan. So I think that he's been consistent, at least on this point, about what he intended to do while he was campaigning for president. He has carried that through. I just think that at this point in time, it's time to reevaluate that decision.
Well, we've got a number. Go ahead, Josh, and then we'll get to calls.
Well, I think that's true. He was saying he was going to increase troop capacity in Afghanistan. He was going to withdraw from Iraq. But let's not forget that we're leaving a mercenary army in Iraq. That country isn't by no means, and of course, this isn't all Obama, but he's not taking troops out and bringing them home. He's distributing most of them throughout other areas of the Middle East. So our presence in the region has actually increased under Obama, not decreased.
And so has his military budget. Let's go to callers. Let's hear from Bill in San Francisco. Hi, Bill. Welcome to the show.
Hi. Thank you very much. I got in on this late, so this may have been discussed already, but I heard you speaking about the your guests on the show that were coming on, and the name of the book was Hopeless.
Yes, that's Joshua Frank co-edited that book.
Right. I just want to say that a number of books today and periodicals and the rest, they come out with very extreme language or terms that they're gotcha terms. It's not hopeless. Just like I don't believe that world peace will necessarily take place in my lifetime. But there is something in between. And there is a difference between Obama and Bush, whether you're Republican or Democrat. And if you don't believe that, look at the Supreme Court people that they're on there right now. There's just not a sense of proportionality in this. And I sense that the person that wrote this book, I'm 65. I lived through Vietnam War. I lost relatives in the Vietnam War. I lost good friends. I lived through Nixon. I lived through riots in the streets. There's a sense of proportionality in all this. And it's not black and white. It's gray. And we cannot hang out with that. We want these quick buzzwords. The left and the right both use it, I think, to an extreme. And it doesn't base it on reality.
Well, let's get a response from Joshua. And just to let you know, Bill, it's a compilation of at least 40 essays by probably a lot of people that you've heard of and read about all sorts of issues. So Joshua, what's your response to Bill, who doesn't like the word hopeless?
Yeah, well, I guess I would say that the title itself, I think, is reflective of a position that a lot of us that are a journalist and a lot of us that are critics have adopted. And we're also basically turning the rhetoric of the Obama administration on itself. Obviously, he ran on the premise of hope and change 4 years ago. And so we turned that upside down. But, you know, it's also a title of a book, and it's easy to judge a book by its title. But I would advocate for picking up a copy and thumbing through it and making a decision based on that.
Hey, Bill, are you still there?
Still here. It's not this book in particular. It's the way that things are presented today. There's this buzzword or gotcha phrase or term, and it's not enough critical thinking. I mean, everyone says this. I know even the term critical thinking is becoming cliche. It's not
That would be a good topic for a show. Thank you for calling in, Bill. And let's hear next from Ruthann in El Cerrito. Hi, Ruthann.
Hi there. I wanted to say, I've been disappointed in Obama on several fronts. I think he could have stood up more for his principles, but primarily I've been the most disappointed with health care and how he caved on that without even, putting single payer on the table, without even addressing the public option, and with the reform he came up with. Even though it will benefit many people, I don't want to see the Supreme Court overrule it, but in essence, it really was a giveaway to the insurance companies. And I think even though he's had a difficult Congress to confront, that he's really been in the hands of not only the financial institutions, but the healthcare industry and the military. And tangentially, that his foreign policy, he may be supposedly withdrawing from Iraq and Afghanistan, but he's replacing all this military might with an increase in drones. So I'm disappointed on both of those.
All right. Well, thank you for calling in, Ruthann. We'll get a response in just a minute. I want to read a few emails. Pauline says, the fact that Obama has taken so much money from Wall Street indicates the political path he will take. I will vote for him, but with a heavy heart. H writes, I support single payer, but doesn't anyone remember the opposition Hillary Clinton faced from the mega bucks insurance industry, the Harry and Louise TV ad? Single payer is death to insurance companies, and they will fight forever to anything that threatens them. I believe Obama could have pressured the insurance companies more by allowing advocates into the process, but this is business and politics. I will not harshly judge the administration for whatever was necessary to move forward. We have an email from Jerry, who says, I'm still wondering who Obama really is. I believe he started off his administration by incorporating some of the Clinton administration's economic policies, appointees, and advisors that have gotten us into this economic mess. To me, that was his first mistake. Second, I can't figure if he or his advisors pushed his tendency to negotiate with the, quote, ultra-conservative right rather than knowing when to give that up, show some backbone, and stand strong. When did he recognize that they play smart and dirty? I agree with your guest that said we as progressives have to be vocal and consistent with what we want in order to be heard. Thank you for that email. Butler writes, I'll be voting for the president, but I won't be making a financial contribution to his campaign, nor doing much else. In 2008, I contributed, got a T-shirt, and somehow even received an invitation to the inauguration. My guess is that he won't need my money this year, but I'm wondering whether my hesitant vote is typical and what it means for his chances this year. And thank you for those emails. You can email us feedback@yourcallradio.org. We have about 10 minutes left, and we're talking today about President Obama's record on healthcare, U.S. Foreign Policy and the Environment. And you can also give us a call at 866-798-8255, 866-798-8255. We're joined today by Joshua Frank, co-editor of the new book, Hopeless, Barack Obama and the Politics of Illusion. Joshua and Jeffrey St. Clair will be speaking at the Anarchist Book Fair this Saturday at 10:30 at the San Francisco County Fair Building, the Hall of Flowers in Golden Gate Park. We're also joined by Faz Shakir. He's vice president of the Center for American Progress and editor-in-chief of thinkprogress.org. So we've spent some time on healthcare and U.S. foreign policy. Why don't we talk about the environment? And Joshua, you're an environmental journalist, so this is really your focus. What are your thoughts on the administration's records thus far on the environment?
It's a very give-and-take approach that's reminiscent of the Babbitt years under Clinton. He can, out of one side of his mouth, say that he wants to curb carbon emissions and put forth legislation or a proposal, even which he did this week, to cut that could potentially could, you know, close a few plants down or not. It actually can't close a few plants down, but could potentially stop the building of new coal-fired power plants. But at the same breath, he supports clean coal technology. He is supporting the nuclear industry. We've seen a resurrection of the nuclear industry and the first proposals in decades. On natural gas and fracking, he is completely backwards in his State of the Union address. He's supported and said that there is a safe fracking that could create jobs. And I believe a lot of tens of thousands of people on the East Coast and out here in California and the Western United States would disagree with that. On a number of issues, he has turned his back on the environmental community. He's opened up expanded coal mining in the Powder River Basin of Montana and Wyoming. So we have not seen a strong political stance for those champions that want to end climate change, to want to fight climate change. We do not have an ally in the White House. In fact, we don't even have a seat at the table. And that's a big problem. And I think that's a problem that's going to carry on into the next 4 years if he is elected.
And he's been spending a lot of time lately defending his record and also defending the decision to fast-track the southern portion of the Keystone XL pipeline. Faz, what are your thoughts on this? Joshua says he's turned his back on the
regulation of the coal-fired power plants is a huge deal. And I think that that's actually going to... I mean, he's obviously pushed for expanding the production of energy-efficient vehicles, and I think that that has also been a big deal. A lot of these things, when you add them up in total, the efforts they made will end up reducing carbon emissions even more than the bill which we had initially wanted to get done. And I'm going to sound like I'm beating a dead horse here. But if you will recall, at the outset of the Obama administration, Henry Waxman and Ed Markey tried to pass a bill that would have imposed a cap-and-trade market for regulating carbon dioxide emissions. They had passed it with a lot of watering down, but a lot of pain, passed it through the House, and it died in the Senate, mostly because Democrats were unwilling to take it up. This is a time when Democrats held the majority of the Senate. This is something that the administration was supporting and pushing aggressively and could not get Senate support for it. So, I mean, I want to remind people again that the effort was there, and unfortunately, from the administration, it was there. And Obama, I think, learned the lesson that he didn't have the support he thought he had. And I think, fortunately, Keystone XL has changed to a degree some of this. And today he was out on the stump, President Obama was, fighting oil companies and the subsidies that they receive and reminding people that we should be using the money that we take from oil companies to invest in clean energy technologies. So I think he's still in the right space, and it's up to progressive advocates to show him that, particularly on combating global warming and climate change, there's more that needs to be done, but that it starts with getting congressional members to support him.
And we've got a number of emails, at least 20. I'll try to get to a few. There's one pointed question here from our listener over in Berkeley. He says, how many times do we have to hear on progressive radio Barack Obama continuing or even exceeding Bush's policies? This is the good cop, bad cop, Republicrat system in which there's so much corporate gimmick. So now your Obama supporter guest says it's really the Democratic Party that's at fault and not Obama. The main question is, Why should progressives support the Democratic Party? Many people have noted that the power of right-wing voters is that they actually make demands for their votes and let their politicians know that the former can elect them and they can unelect them. That's the kind of accountability that progressives are not willing to exert. So instead of Obama's ear, we usually get his finger. What are your thoughts on that, Faz?
My entire livelihood here at the Center for American Progress and Think Progress is to push ideas over people. That it is our belief that if you build movement for ideas, ideas never let you down. It's the people who do. And ultimately, what you're trying to do is build support for whatever idea you want, and then ultimately get a politician to endorse it. And I think too many people who vote in this country go about it the opposite way, which is to say, well, I got a person who I like, and I got some ideas, but I'm just going to go with the person who I like, because there's either a D or an R next to their name, or I haven't dug enough to figure out whether they support the ideas I support. I would urge that people engage in a kind of advocacy around ideas first, and then make politicians try to hold them accountable to those ideas.
What do you think about that, Josh?
Well, I don't believe that you can support a candidate if that candidate does not support the issues that you hold dear. So I would caution voters to Trump for Barack Obama if, for instance, they actually care about climate change. I mean, just to go back a little bit and to clarify, the Obama administration released greenhouse gas proposal to potentially regulate the industry. But what is in the fine print that you won't necessarily hear from the Obama administration is that they're grandfathering in all the old coal plants, which are responsible for 40% of carbon emissions in this country. Right now, in the last 3 years, the coal movement has stopped the construction of a single coal plant. So essentially, what's happening is the Obama administration is putting forth regulations that will essentially have no impact on the coal industry. They're already struggling in this country. But in fact, what it will do is support the continued expansion of natural gas because of his proposal of 1,000 pounds of carbon per megawatt of electricity. Natural gas plants meet that requirement, and we will continue to see an increase in fracking as a result. So let's just be clear. If these are the issues that you're concerned about, Barack Obama is not your man.
Well, we have a call on the environment. Let's hear from Travis in Oakland. Hi, Travis.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. So kind of piggybacking on the whole discussion here, I believe it was last week that Obama made the announcement about that he was approving the southern leg of the XL pipeline, right?
Right.
And you guys probably already tapped in on this. So for me, that was kind of the last straw, and it just that broke the camel's back, and it was just too much for me. I've had too many disappointments, and it's a real shame because, you know, I think like so many people, maybe I had unfair expectations, and really, I feel like I got duped. You know, I feel like so many of my friends really thought that this was the guy, you know, that was really going to change things.
So, does this mean you're not going to vote for him in November, Travis?
You know, I think that I don't know. You know, I'm kind of perplexed, and I'd like maybe the recommendation of your guests, as you know, like me and so many people in my position, what would you recommend in this situation? Mm-hmm. You know, here's a situation where so many people have been so active and so vocal, and we thought we had a victory with the XL pipeline, and you know, and then like with the blink of an eye, he just kind of turns it back. On the whole thing.
Yeah, and I mean, there even when he was in Oklahoma, there were Native Americans were protesting. They had to go stand behind kind of a barrier. It wasn't a cage that was reported, but that wasn't true. But they had to stand behind a barrier, and a lot of people are still protesting Keystone. What about that, Faz? A lot of people say, just like Travis, that this is it. This was the last straw for them.
Well, I understand the disappointment, and I think that the alternatives are far worse is really the bottom line, particularly on the environment. You got to ultimately on this question, it becomes a political one. And if we're trying to build a movement I think it starts with having better Democrats and better Obamas. And the effort to get there is not going to be Mitt Romney, Newt Gingrich, Rick Santorum. I think it just heads us. It basically concedes defeat and says, I give up and I don't care. And I think that kind of cynicism, particularly at a juncture in which I've been trying to make the argument that we've been moving in a positive direction, granted it's not everything that everybody wanted, but moving in a positive direction, that over the next 4, 8, and potentially 12 years where you continue to elect people who learn the right lessons and move in that direction. Yeah, I mean, a lot of this is, do you take positive gain and try to build on that by getting more positive gain? Or do you take, well, I got some positive gain, I didn't like it, it wasn't enough, let's chuck that out the window and I give up and go home. And I think that's a fundamental choice that, you know, presents itself to progressives. And I would urge strongly that you continue to remain involved, continue to make your advocacy, continue to make your points, and end up supporting Obama, actually.
Well, we don't have time for any other callers, but I just want to say Dan called in saying Obama let down a whole generation of hopeful voters, and now they're done. We've got emails from Greg who says he's just appeasing his corporate masters. He's owned by corporations. Look at where all of his money's coming from. We have a number of emails, actually, along those lines. So, Joshua, what are your thoughts? I mean, you're hearing a lot of progressives say what Faz said, that, you know, if you don't vote for Obama, look what you get. You've got to build on this. Keep pushing. I mean, we've been hearing this the last few years. What are your thoughts?
Yeah, well, I'd be cautious to say, what are we building on? I mean, the politics in this country and politicians in general only respond if their power is threatened. And the only way to threaten their power is to, in this case, refuse to vote for candidates you don't agree with. And there needs to be a mass dissent in this country in order for the Democrats in this case to be held accountable. You can't, if the anti-war bloc or the environmental movement blindly supports the president, in the end, at the end of the day, he can do whatever he wants because he's not going to be accountable to those people. If he fears that his support, their support, will be lost, then you're going to get somewhere. And I would also like to add that the Occupy Wall Street movement is still prevalent. And there's a reason why the Occupy Wall Street movement has continued to grow, and I think that it needs to evolve and has plenty of problems. However, it's independent. It is separate from either party, and it's looking at the bigger picture. And I think those are the type of things that will make change in this country. It's not about necessarily who you're voting for, if it's a D or an R. It's about pushing progressive politics. It's about supporting candidates that you agree with and not being afraid.
And unfortunately, we're out of time, but we will definitely continue this. That's Joshua Frank, co-editor of the book Hopeless. He and Jeffrey St. Clair will be speaking at the Anarchist Book Fair Saturday, 10:30 at the San Francisco County Fair Building in Golden Gate Park. Faz Shakir is vice president at the Center for American Progress. Thank you both for joining us. And thanks for all of your phone calls and emails. I'm Rose Aguilar. It's Your Call. Here's what's coming up tomorrow. On the next Your Call, it's our Friday Media Roundtable. This week, we'll have a conversation with ProPublica's Abram Lustgarten about his new book, Run to Failure, BP and the Making of the Deepwater Horizon Disaster. We'll also talk about coverage of President Obama's push to expedite the approval of the southern end of the Keystone XL pipeline. Join us at 10 or email feedback at yourcallradio.org. What did you see the best reporting this week? It's Your Call with me, Rose Aguilar, and you.